Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Here, after a bumper weekend of Six Nations, Premiership, what the rugby was going on this weekend?
Super Rugby.
Super Rugby, yeah.
Women's Rugby, Tier 2 Six Nations Rugby, Sevens Rugby.
Vets Rugby.
Vets Rugby. Disney Talk H Rugby. Talk H Rugby happened as well.
Where's your bell gone?
I don't know. Where has it gone?
JB's right there.
Hello, Timothy.
Have you not gone synthetic bell?
Yeah, I have. I'm trying to work out which
I think. Phil's right there as well.
Hello, Tim.
Right, you can find us at Rugby Podcast. We're currently streaming on YouTube. So, yeah, go and subscribe there and all the other places, you know the score. So, the way we're going to work this week's podcast is we're going to do two... You just turned me off.
Sorry.
I can't hear myself.
Can you hear yourself now?
Yes, faintly. There you go.
Now?
Yeah, that's better.
No? Cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. I like this sort of producing on the fly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Real professional.
So, we're going to do two podcasts this week, and it's not going to be split international and domestic. It's going to be split on field and off field, because there's all sorts of things going on with the salary cap, with the World League proposal that came through from World Rugby. So, we're going to cover all of that off in a boardroom podcast.
Oh, the boardroom podcast.
But this is the dugout podcast.
Nice.
After the weekend's rugby. So, obviously, we're going to start with the Six Nations. No, actually, let's not start with the Six Nations. I want to start by just mentioning Philip, who played his first game of rugby this weekend.
How'd you go, Phil?
In 18 months.
Yeah, first since New York, New Jersey.
Yeah, so I was about to say this. Like, first time you've been out for a while. Phenomenally talented rugby player. But, much like the great Owen Farrell... needs a hard man to hold his hand. Now, in New Jersey, you were fine, because obviously I played 12.
There was a hard man alongside me.
Yeah. How did you get on without me? Were you okay?
Well, Lee Lloyd was there. He's quite hard. But also, Tim Cocker. Me and Tim actually made up a back two at one stage due to injuries and shortage of numbers.
Why? How many?
There was 14 players on the pitch at that time.
On the pitch?
Sorry. 28 players on the pitch.
Right.
14
right.
For each team.
Yeah, there was no one else that could fill in at the back, so I did the banners job and slotted in auxiliary winger.
People don't realise how valuable I am in these situations.
So, yeah, Phil did all right. So we played against Withenshaw. I think they scored 5 or 6 tries in the match. Phil, on his own, scored 5 tries.
Wow.
There was a couple of times when I was... busting my lungs to keep up alongside Phil as he ran it in. I thought he might at least, after 4, he might just ship it me so I can have one.
Sorry, I wanted to hit 5. I was hoping to get 10.
But once again, the concept of Friday Night Vets Rugby is brilliant.
I know, I was gutted to miss it. I was absolutely gutted. But I had duties to be done at Sail Sharks. So I went there to interview AJ in the Sharky. And then I watched the game in a rather unusual place. Not unusual for... you know, a lot of people, but unusual for me, which is in the gantry. Never been there before. Didn't even know it existed. It's massive.
The gantry up at the top for cameras.
Yeah, you've got to keep going.
Awesome.
And then you find it, and it's absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I watched the game there. Just me and AJ. Could not be more perfect.
Romantic.
Candle.
Yeah, well, so we could see the Leicester Tigers coaching staff. So up there was some comms guys who I'm not sure who they were. And there were Leicester Tigers. I can tell you, at the end of that game, they looked visibly shaken to me. They looked like Yeah, it hasn't been a good week for Leicester Tigers.
We will come on to that in a little bit. But let's start with the rugby. And we've had a bunch of good questions come in to At Rugby Podcast. Let me start with this one. Should Wales win the Grand Slam? Will this be the worst side to have won a Grand Slam?
Or the best side? I mean, it depends which way you look at this. So let's rewind the clock to 5 weeks ago. No, further away than that. When did it first start? Like 7 weeks ago now?
First game week. First week in February.
Yeah. So we're reviewing this, and I think we might have said this is the most competitive Six Nations that we have seen. Yeah. England looks stacked.
100%.
France, well, okay.
We know they've got talent.
Yeah.
Some back them more than others.
Ireland coming into this were the best team in the world.
Yeah.
Scotland were doing things.
Yeah, Scotland didn't have all the injuries they do right now.
Exactly. And everyone was saying Wales are the dark horses. Yeah. So no matter what happens, I mean, if Wales win this, they are not the best team in the Six Nations. But they're the best coach, they're the most canny, they're the cleverest. It might be the best Grand Slam, but it's not the best team to win a Grand Slam.
Yeah, I could go with that. I think you kind of highlighted it in the wake of the England game. The man-on-man Wales and England probably have more talent, but the way that Wales team have played and the way they play together, they are a hell of a team.
Yeah,
you don't win 13 international rugby games on the bounce. You don't go 4 out of 4 in the Six Nations.
Ooh, dear Phil.
Ooh, steady. Without being a very, very good team.
Yeah. And to give some context to where Zippy Chuck, who sent us this tweet to At Rugby Podcast, he said, after saying, will this be the worst ever Grand Slam team if Wales were to get one? 4 tight wins, 0 bonus points. And I will add to that another stat, which is that Scotland have the lowest number of tries in the tournament.
Oh.
The next lowest is Italy, which you might expect.
Yep.
And Wales, who have the same number of tries.
So it is, saying it is surprising that top and bottom of the Six Nations both have the same number of tries.
Four wins and 4 defeats.
But is it not a little bit like Floyd Mayweather having a very limited amount of knockouts? I mean, they just get the job done. It doesn't really matter how it gets done.
Well, so, yes, if Wales win the thing. If they don't win the thing, so Wales losing out on a bonus point win against Italy could end up costing them.
Yeah.
So not being able to score 4 tries against what we kind of, well, certainly after this weekend, we know is not a great Italy team who were well and truly put to the sword by England. That's not great. They've not got a single bonus point, and they have looked. So this weekend, they looked very good. The 2 tries that they scored, they took them really well. They had more opportunities than that when they had good attacking ball and overlaps, and 2 in particular where George North crashed it in and one where Jake Ball crashed it in instead of using hands. And one in the second half where I think it was a bigger pass to Josh Adams went down. So
did score to Josh Adams was a forward pass and should have been ruled out as such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to take the shine off of ground out wins, particularly the game against England. They really, really ground
Here's
that one out.
Here's a question for you, right? I know what you're going to say. I'm not sure I would say the same thing. The new wingers, I mean, he's not that new anymore, but he's sort of still new. Who would you rather have in your team if you were picking it tomorrow? Josh Adams or Joe Cockenessinger?
Interesting question.
That is a tough question.
Because we'll come on to the England game in a bit, but Joe Cockenessinger was at fault for both of the England tries.
Yes, Phil.
And people are talking him up like he is the second coming.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, my God. I'm Phil. Yeah, I knew I could rely on Phil to bring that. Exactly.
I've been talking about the deficiencies of Joe Cockenessinger for quite some time.
Yeah, and I watched the game yesterday, and there's no doubt him rampaging forward with the ball in one hand. You can take the boy out of Fiji, but you can't take the Fiji out of the boy. It's phenomenal to watch the little out of the back of the hands offload. But yeah, both Italy's tries were where he should have been.
Misread the situation and found himself out of position.
So, right, you can say Josh Adams, but another question is Jack Knoll or...
Josh Adams?
Jack Knoll or Joe Cockenessinger?
Jack Knoll.
And also...
Probably, or Chris Ashton.
Yeah.
Or Alex Lewington.
Maybe not Lewington.
No, definitely Alex Lewington. Definitely.
And there was a Josh Adams's try, the step.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, there was an element of Anthony Watson about that, which is who England might have had on their right wing had everybody been fit.
I think Anthony Watson's a good one here, because I sort of think it's not Shane Williams. It's not jinky enough for Shane Williams. It's not quite steppy enough for Jason Robinson. It's something slightly different. Like, Anthony
Nought to top speed in a few steps is what Josh Adams can do and what Anthony Watson can do.
That step was just
it was lovely. That
yeah,
but it was so that Wales found themselves for both of those tries. They found enormous overlaps in the Scotland defence. Gregor Townsend will be very disappointed because it was a failure to recognise numbers from Scotland and just a failure to adapt and get the players out there, which in those two instances Wales did execute brilliantly, but they also messed up at least a couple of chances.
And to loop this all together and sort of tie in the Joe Cock and the Singer thing and his effectiveness against Italy, but then who would you pick for a subsequent game? Look at what Wales did to England. Putting Joe Cock and the Singer on the right wing is not going to change the fact that Wales shut England down defensively,
yeah,
as they did Scotland. And as they do, and they have the best defence in world rugby at the moment. I think they're up there with where Ireland were.
It's not even. It's hard to explain. England's defence for me is the most pleasurable to watch, providing they are playing against the right opposition. And even then, you can have the best opposition in the world. If they are playing a style which suits England's defence, they will lose. So I actually think, in terms of sheer brutality, I love watching the England defence, but it's not flexible. I think the Welsh defence is flexible. It doesn't have that that collision factor, the impressiveness of the English defence, but it does work harder and it is so much more flexible.
I will say there was an element where I'd be interested to see what you saw, because you were actually at Murrayfield.
I was.
It looked to me like Wales were offside the whole game.
So the seats that I had weren't the best. I had a very good weekend, and I was very grateful for the tickets. But I was six rows back behind the goals, so very low down behind the goals, at the opposite end from where all the tries happened. So I didn't have the best view of any offsides. One thing I will say about the Welsh overall game, the team, but it really shows in their defence, and it showed very well against England and very, very well against Scotland late on, the fitness of that team. That team is seriously fit.
They're so good.
And cause they can just keep going. And coming into the tournament...
I say they're so good. They're not so good. They're just a really good team. Not a great team of individuals, just a really good team.
It's the team bit.
Do you know who's massively impressed me? And I put out a tweet about him today, actually. A guy who I've never rated at all, but he's come good. Josh Navidi. Like, his man strength, just the way he wrestles people. So I tweeted today, like, that boy must have a background in wrestling or grappling or something. Because
his ability to hold people up, yeah.
Oh, he's just handling people.
Is his dad a bodybuilder or a wrestler or something?
Well, someone's come back to me and said he's an Iranian wrestler. Now, anyone who knows anything about wrestling will know that Iranians are bloody good at wrestling. So that would stack up nicely.
There you go. But yeah, he was good. He actually missed a tackle on Darcy Graham when he came through, but that's nothing to do with strength. It's because Darcy Graham is very elusive, kind of hit low and spun out of it.
Yeah, and the other one as well, who again I thought was an absolute flat track bully, turns out he's a lot more than that, is Moriarty. I think Moriarty's been superb.
So what Moriarty does really well is his work rate. Yeah. So his fitness and his work rate. And his carrying has been nowhere near as impressive as Faletau. But it hasn't actually mattered yet. I wonder if it will matter against Ireland.
I don't know. Looking at Ireland today, I think Wales are favourites now.
At home, I think.
Yes. I would agree.
Who knows?
I would agree that Wales are marginal favourites.
It's too close to call at the moment.
Jumping on to Scotland, how much of a mitigating factor is their very lengthy list of injuries? How much does that give Gregor Townsend a get-out-of-jail-free card here?
So it is significant for this tournament, and I think it can explain a lot of the poor performances. And even in that one game, they ended up with Ali Price playing on the wing, and they had Hastings playing fullback. because McGuigan came on, McGuigan goes off.
He's broken a rib, I think.
Oh, no.
Which is a real shame.
Might have to drop, yeah, I know. Friend of the pod. For him, yes, friend of the pod, but also for my fantasy rugby draft team. Devastating.
He was sitting in this chair 5 weeks ago when we were previewing the tournament, 6 weeks ago, and when he came on for that Scotland try...
He looked really good.
He just looked electric.
He is electric.
That was brilliant. And him and Hastings... The two off the bench, I thought, were two of the best players for Scotland, actually. Because I thought Finn Russell, he didn't have his best game. There's a couple of his passes were a bit flat. A couple of them didn't go to hand. And I think the centre partnerships, Scotland have obviously got injuries. Missing someone like Hugh Jones at outside centre is always going to cost you. But the centre partnership didn't gel in attack or in defence.
I was disappointed with Nick Grigg.
Yes.
Simply for the fact that I know how good he is. I know how much they rate him up in Glasgow, and I thought he'd come good, actually.
He's a tough little nut, and he put himself around. I would say Scotland have a lot of players, and it's what we've always said of Scotland. When you deplete them of a few guys, the guys that are coming in will work hard, but the class, there's not the layers of class that there is with Ireland and England.
There's not many teams in the world that could lose the likes of, well, Finn Russell last week, but Hogg and Hugh Jones.
Feel broadly similar in that respect to Wales. I think they've got a similar amount of depth. Mm. You know, I don't think you can go much further down on Wales's squad before you start to struggle.
No. But if you took eight Welshmen out of that team, although actually I would say that's been the strength of Wales over the last year or so. Over this 13 game winning streak, is actually they have brought in guys that have come in and done a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, not to hark back on this too much, but like I just look at Wales team and I think, how long would Thomas Francis, Josh Adams, and Gareth Ainscombe have to wait? How many lifetimes before they got called up to England?
It would be a long wait.
Josh Adams, even. I mean, I can't see him being.
Well, which English players haven't had a crack that if they were Welsh, would probably be tearing up trees in the Six Nations.
Which English players haven't had a crack, who will have a crack when Warren Gatland replaces Eddie Jones next year? Because, like, he is going to have a field day with that squad. They are going to be the best team in the world, bar none, by some distance. If Gatland gets his grubby little mitts on them, I just can't wait to see it.
Did you hear his comment after the game? He said, when he was asked about the Ireland game next week, he said, I'm looking forward to my last Six Nations game for Wales.
Oh. Yeah. So Italy next.
Did he say that with a knowing smile?
Yeah.
Oh, did. Okay.
Wales. Yes. He will be England coach. I just have a feeling.
Yeah.
That'd be mad. Anyway, it's possible. Yes. So who would I like to see? Well, I think he'd be using Cipriani. I think he'd be using Robson. I think he'd be, not every game, but I think he would have a role for Robson.
Gets the odd 10 minutes here and there. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Scored a try this weekend.
How is he considered the second best scrum half in England? I'm not saying he's not, but like, how does Eddie Jones kind of work this? Does Eddie Jones really believe he is the second best scrum half in England? And if he does, why is he treating him like he is?
So, honest answer is, I think no. I think he thinks that Danny Kerr is the second best. And I think he's just getting experience in case he's not got his... option A and option B available,
and maybe,
albeit not very much experience.
And maybe stoking the fire in Danny Kerr.
I think there is an element of that, yeah.
Such a terrible situation for Robson to be in. I mean, do you want 10 minutes at the end of an England game to stoke the fires for Danny Kerr?
But it is also...
Will he take 3 nines to a World Cup?
No.
I would.
He will not.
No? Why? Would you not take Wigglesworth?
He hasn't done in the past.
No, do you know what? He won't do that. I don't know why I'm thinking logically about Eddie Jones. Of course he won't do that, because he wants plan A, and he wants plan A with different players. So he's not going to want plan B with Richard Wigglesworth or plan C with, Dan Robson.
So it's interesting on the plan A and B, because I thought there was a marked difference in the way that England played. And... obviously, it's against Italy. Mm-hmm. But I think there was some parallels in where England found successes and where the weaknesses of Scotland have come. And I actually think this is a game plan that was tested out on Italy that is going to be used against Scotland. And by that, I mean where they found most of their joy was getting either Manu Tuilagi, Elliot Daly, Thokkonen Singer, or Johnny May with a one-on-one on the... Well, it happened to be your mate, Esposito, on...
Esposito.
On a few occasions.
He's very good.
But they're trying to manipulate something on... It is either the 13 or the winger trying to manipulate an overlap, so you've got a one-on-one, either any of those dangerous runners on one man, which, to look ahead to next week, I think the way that Scotland played against Wales, I think they would struggle to defend that.
Yeah, I think... I mean, if that's your plan, it's not a great plan, is it? Because if I was a coach, I just picked the biggest guys and said, look, my plan is to get any one of these guys on a one-on-one. I mean, eventually that's going to happen. So I'm not...
Well, it didn't happen against Wales, partly because they weren't playing that way, but it didn't happen against Wales, did it?
Yeah, and I'm very, very suspicious about this dropping of the extra playmaker, because Elliot Daly can do bits and pieces, but he's not a playmaker. He's a runner who can kick.
Yeah,
you've got the two big lads who are basically the same thing. And then you've got another big lad on the wing.
They're 1A, 1B.
And then you've got Johnny May, who just sort of is Johnny May. I don't think this can last. And I think if they do go and play a good nation with that lineup, they're going to get an absolute hiding.
Well, yeah, the test would be, how do you think that England team, and playing the way they played, would have got on against that Wales defence?
It is a good question. I think it would have been a better strategy than the strategy they enacted in the Wales game, which was kick everything you possibly can to Liam Williams and just let him defuse everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said about England recently, is they're hard to play against because the players are amazing. You know, all those players, no matter how badly they're coached or whatever's happened before, are going to be a handful. But they're easy to prepare for. And that gives people with the mind, minds of Gatland or the minds of Townsend, a fighting chance. And these guys should have no fighting chance. They should be absolutely put. They should absolutely be put to the sword.
So, did we learn anything else from the England game?
Yeah. So, it's interesting. You mentioned I didn't think Cocker Singer was man of the match. I thought he looked electric going forward. He was at fault in defence, and there were holes. It was on balance. Credit. He's in credit.
Yeah, and it's only his, third or fourth cap?
So it was great, but I thought Elliot Daly was excellent.
Yeah.
And I thought George Cruz has been one of England's players of the tournament. He was immense.
Yeah. He's an immense player, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he wasn't even in favour at the start.
No, he wasn't even in the England squad a couple of squads back.
Yeah.
He wasn't even involved.
Knocking about.
Wasn't he left at home?
I think he was for one of them.
Was it the summer tour? He didn't go to South Africa? No, that can't be right.
What was it? Autumn tour?
Autumn. I think the autumn he might not have even been involved. Anyway.
You are right. There's been a period without George Cruz.
Yeah.
And I think we've forgotten exactly how good he is and why he's a Lion and why he's a multiple European Cup winner and Premiership winner.
Going back to your Danny Kerr point, maybe was that deliberate to leave George Cruz out? You're not quite at your best. I know what you can do. You need to go and sharpen up.
Yeah. It's interesting. Because I think you can probably retrospectively apply that in a lot of instances. You don't know whether it's deliberate. No. You don't know whether that is a strategy.
Mm. It's going to be interesting. Oh, also, what we have learned is, another question. In fact, I'll make a statement, agree or disagree. Dylan Hartley can only hope to get a bench spot when he returns.
Yes, with my only caveat that I still don't like Farrell as captain and leader of defensive line and leading the backs and kicking. I think it's a bit too much responsibility for him. So unless another leader steps up for the captaincy.
And it is curious, why England have got so many good players and so few leaders. It's a worry for me.
It is interesting because you look, I was chatting yesterday about all of the World Cup winning teams. I could probably name most of the team from 2003, from 2007, from 11, 15.
Yeah, you think, and you think 07, 07 you go Matt Field,
Dupree,
the other second row, Backy's Butter,
yeah.
Scoutberger.
Yeah.
Wow. They're
just all over the team.
Well, Launchby's not going to start, okay? So I don't think it's going to be... I don't think he could be captain. So just having a look at people who I would potentially make England captain... I wouldn't be outraged if Courtney Laws was given the nod. I think that would be pretty cool because he's done it for Northampton.
I hear what you're saying, but any one of these players could step up and could do an amazing job, Owen Farrell included. But I think going on what Phil has said, it's not even a debate. You would have half a dozen proven captains to pick from most World Cup winning sides.
Yes, exactly. That's the point.
That is the
point.
Who
is the... I mean, is Brad Shields there for that reason? He's got captaincy experience. I know he's got two tries against Italy, so on and so forth.
He had his best game, again, against Italy.
Yeah.
But he did have a very good game all round. And Manu, I was critical of him a couple of weeks ago. Manu had a very good game, back playing at 13, which is...
Much better for him.
Much better for him. And they played a game plan to get the ball into his hands with some space outside, which is great.
And so, to go back to what you're saying, they have plan A. Actually, okay, the pack isn't going to change massively. But in the back line, outside of the scrum half, you could go Ford Farrell as 10-12. You could go Farrell two massive bludgeoning centres,
mm-hmm.
or you could go Farrell two Alangi Slade.
Or you go Farrell Slade Joseph.
Farrell Slade Joseph.
Distributing.
So there are, with personnel, there actually are options. Whether Eddie Jones actually uses that to manipulate the way he plays a lot remains to be seen, and we're running out of time, so I think he would probably limit that. And
so from what I've seen, by far England's best combination is big centre, probably Manu, could be Teo, either or, with Slade. That to me is the best, and I think that is remarkably similar to the Ford Farrell combo, but without the defensive frailties. You've got two playmakers, they go either side of a breakdown or what have you. That to me is their best option so far.
So we've not seen Joseph for 12 months?
I know. I'm looking for 18 months. Has he got enough time to get himself established?
Well,
he was called into the squad.
Yeah, and he's played a bit of rugby. He's played a lot with that England team. He's not played much with him and Manu, which is possibly the way you'd go. Although he has played a bit with Teo. Yeah,
and the success of... It is clear that Eddie Jones wants a big ball carrier in midfield.
Yes. Yeah.
So one of those... So you're going to have to put in...
I think whatever your coaching philosophy, if you had Manu Tuilagi fit and firing available, you'd find a way to accommodate him.
Yeah. But the question is, where do you get the extra playmaking ability from? Because it's not going to be Daly. So something's got to give, and maybe that is Daly. But Daly's playing so well, maybe Jonathan Joseph doesn't get in because I can't see the accommodation.
And he's never really looked at Goode, who's your playmaking option from fullback.
And also can play 10.
He can play 10.
He is playing 10, actually.
Yes.
You know, he's a great player. Slade could do it as well. Slade at 15 would be fine.
What I'm encouraged by as an England fan is the number of question marks are starting to go away.
Really?
So before the Six Nations, there was, I've held my hands up already earlier on in the tournament and said, I was wrong on Daly at fullback. I wasn't convinced. I still think Mike Brown could well be the man for certain occasions when there's a certain type of game, I would want Mike Brown and no one else that's English at the back. There are moments where I think that would be the case.
The Island game at Twickenham last year
100%.
would have been one of those.
100%. So, I still think he's got a role to play potentially, but I'm wrong. So the fullback issue, question mark's kind of gone. The question mark about 10, 12 and 13 is slowly starting to go.
The question mark over Ford and Farrell, I think it's an option you can use.
The seven was the other question mark.
Well, you've got two.
Yeah, you've got two great ones.
My only concern of the sevens is, are you going to get either of them fit at the right time? Because they are both... They are both so
reckless.
Fearless. Yeah, reckless.
No regard for their own safety.
That's where you go with the Curries, and you use both of them.
Yeah.
Right? Because just double the chance of staying on the field.
Bench Curry, as I keep saying.
Yeah.
Get Bench Curry involved.
Yeah.
But anyway, but the midfield one, it's not clear cut now,
no.
But it's starting to form a shape, at least.
It is. I still do not know what the best option is.
Other than Sam Burgess.
That's an idea.
Of course.
Obviously.
He's probably only a 7 or 8 hour flight away from Japan.
Yeah, come on.
Call up Sam.
I'd go with I've said this for a long time, but the guy I'd most like to convert into an English centre is not Sam Burgess, but his propping nemesis. I can't remember his first name now. Graham. What's his first name?
Oh, yeah.
The best, in my mind, the best rugby player the British Isles has produced in a generation. He still plays, and we don't talk about him nearly enough.
Yeah. Former St. Helens plays for plays in the NRL.
Ginger
now.
Prop.
Yeah.
Why can't I remember his... This is embarrassing. But anyway, he is literally the best rugby player of a generation from Britain.
James Graham.
From the UK Ireland.
Yeah.
Hands down. It's not even close.
He is a specimen.
Yeah. And his hands. I mean, just go and look. Sorry, this isn't going to turn into a 10-minute James Graham segment, right? But go on YouTube and just watch James Graham highlights. And the first 10 minutes is him running over people and writing people off. The second 10 minutes is the most beautiful collection of wonderful hand, wonderful passes and hands. He's a marvellous player.
Ian Martin has tweeted to @RugbyPodcast and said, "How much did you enjoy Genge lifting his opponent's shirt up and getting his belly out at every scrum reset?"
This is like that Dave Flatman's spoke about at length, which is one of the most annoying things for a prop, is someone lifting up your top because those skin-tight ones don't come down. And you know you're on TV.
Also, just some live podcasting feedback. David Forey is saying, "JB, move the microphone. It looks like you have a messed up hipster beard."
I don't know. Oh, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. Apologies for that.
It's just all right. It's fine.
I've got to keep my pop filter up.
Leave
sorry,
it as it is. Joe Sheridan, who's saying, "I would really like to know your thoughts on the World League." Just to reiterate, we will be doing that in a later podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
Al O'Brien, the Six Nations is in trouble. France are shite. Scotland fits and starts, and Italy could do with dropping out for a few seasons. Is that too harsh a categorisation? Having said that, this is one of the most competitive. Mm. It's also the chasm between the ones that are doing well and the ones
top
that
three
aren't.
And the bottom three.
There's a huge gap in the middle, isn't there?
Well, first of all, don't worry about France. They're fine. That's
I am worried.
No, France are the big winners from the Six Nations so far. By a long way, actually.
It's a long con.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you going to shift from they're going to win the Six Nations to they're going to win the World Cup?
Well, I think I put them as my favourite for the World Cup anyway. So, do you want me to talk about that now?
Yeah, well, yeah, let's get into the game.
All right.
Or do you want to introduce the game by telling us why this is good for France?
Yeah, okay. So, France have lost again, and it is a bit of a beatdown, and they look like a bit of a joke.
They were rubbish.
There were bits to sort of look at and think, yeah, that's not as rubbish as we thought. At the end of the Six Nations, there's going to be a lot of game tape about how you beat different teams. So the biggest losers for me of the Six Nations, regardless of what happens next week, is going to be Ireland. Ireland are the biggest losers from the Six Nations because coming into it, they looked almost undefeatable. And now there is a clear blueprint of how to beat them, and they will be devastated about that, and their confidence will be knocked. And I tell you what, there are a lot of teams out there who could emulate what England did. Think about someone like South Africa. Large, big men who work bloody hard. That, to me,
and an
is...
an intelligent, well-executed kicking game as well.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, someone like South Africa could quite easily do what England did to Ireland. So Ireland
what, but then why
losers.
Would South Africa move away from their blueprint of just electrifying... speedsters,
yeah, married
who
to
cut
absolute
you to shreds.
Monsters,
yeah. The two in tandem, but I wouldn't abandon. Yeah,
and Faf de Klerk,
and Faf de Klerk. I mean, yeah. You know, they could do it. New Zealand have probably been plotting and scheming for them.
Yeah.
Since you know they lost last time, and that game will give them a little bit more ammunition. England, we've kind of worked out exactly who they are after Wales. And then you know Wales and Scotland, no real surprises there, other than you know how well or how badly that they've done. France, we still don't really know about. We just know that they're terrible. We just know they're absolute garbage, but we're still really good players. I don't care what anyone says. They are really good players.
They've got some phenomenally talented players.
They're amazing.
They do, but then what did we talk about when we were talking about Wales earlier? How were we characterising their performance, the performance of a team? And then Exeter Chiefs, when they won the Premiership a couple of years ago, you looked at some of the names on that, and it was the collective.
The solutions for France are so simple. When Jordan Lahma kicks that corner and there's nobody there, I'm like...
No one within 50 metres of where the ball...
Wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I know.
Me and Phil playing Vets rugby for Broughton Park.
Two of us
Friday
in the backfield.
Well,
we would have
had that, there, we'd have had that
covered. I'm getting a bit annoyed about this. I've taken 1 week off and it's me and Phil. We've all played Vets rugby, okay? Yeah, like, I know with Talk H. I know exactly what our exits are like. Everyone knows what our exits are like. France had no exit strategy. They're a professional team, they have no exit strategy. Somehow, and this is genuinely impressive, they managed to only concede 3 tries in the first half. Yeah. I don't know any team in the world that could have put up with so much pressure and only conceded the 3 tries.
And that does say something about Ireland's lack of creativity, which is what they've been struggling with this year. And it's certainly not going to get any easier to find tries against Wales next week. But I mean, one of the tries, so there was the Rory Best push over.
My God, he dragged his man over. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Rory Best, right, all that Antoine Dupont needs to do is
just fall on the floor.
He lifts him up, and we lift him up so we can get a latch on. Try, thanks.
But the most incredible, the best example of French ineptitude, if the llama kick through or the Rory Best try wasn't, was the Johnny Sexton wraparound where Ficou and Ouje bump into each other. They take each other out.
Yeah.
How much game tape, how many times have we seen the Johnny Sexton wraparound?
Ooh. Millions of times.
Millions. Millions and millions of times. And not only were they not expecting it, they bumped into each other trying to defend
it.
And it
was the most
took
basic variation of the wraparound.
It was just a wraparound. And Johnny Sexton goes in. It was unbelievable.
I know.
That a professional rugby...
So here's the thing, right? If I am in France's group, like England are, right, and I'm doing my analysis of France, I know nothing about them still, do I? Let's kick into... What are we going to do? We're going to kick to where they had no people. Because all they need to do is drop some people
Just put one person there.
Yeah, and it's all ruined for you. So I am quietly confident that France will win the World Cup.
I like your optimism. I don't share it, I'm afraid. I think they've got to change something.
Well,
coaches, captains, players.
I don't know if it's a distraction, but... Well, I would say, and we've talked about him loads, we don't need to go over the same old ground about why he can be brilliant, but if Bastereau is the answer...
So good.
You're asking the wrong question.
No, he is the answer. He is the answer.
Like, not for France.
Why? I mean, they just need to put him in... They need to give him an opportunity to actually get on the front foot. Like, Entomac was stood there today, feet planted on the ground. He looked like not even a rabbit in headlights. It's not even his fault. They had no exit strategy.
Yeah.
So he can't do anything.
Well, anyway, I may say, if Bastereau's your answer, then you're asking the wrong question. Although David Howells has tweeted us, and it appears, at least from
David Howells from Broughton Park?
I'm not sure. At least this, it might be, actually. Anyway, I recognise him. Oh, he played in our Vets team on Friday. He was our 10. Do you remember that time he put you into space, Phil, when we were playing together on Friday
Absolutely.
Night? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
How was your knee, by the way? Is it all right?
Grazed. Very, very. So I was wearing, for the rugby up in Edinburgh, because it was bitterly cold, biting wind, I was wearing long johns, and my long johns were stuck to my grazed knees and hip and thigh.
Not as bad as that Alex Mitchell, the Northampton scrum half from last week.
Not that bad.
I saw that. It's nasty.
That was horrible. No, anyway, we've been sent a picture where it appears that Matthew Bastereau is top of the Guinness Six Nations Fantasy League. With 3,237.3 points.
Good for him.
It appears to be actually Matthew Bastereau.
Has it got a blue tick next to it or something?
I don't think they do that in fantasy
I'd love it to be Matthew Bastereau.
Wouldn't that be brilliant?
Yeah, it would actually.
I'm just going to take a quick moment to say thank you very much for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. And one way you can support us and also sort yourself out with an incredible shave is with our friends at Cornerstone. They've been our friends and supporters, since the very start, really.
Kept the ship afloat.
We wouldn't have been able to...
Kept the wind in our sails.
Yeah, totally. We wouldn't have been able to keep doing
it. And it looks like they might be hoisting a new mast soon.
Ooh, yes, they are.
But we will talk about that once we get our offer code.
Oh, yeah. Yes, indeed. That sounds too cryptic, I will say. I'll tell people. They're moving into other products which might affect men of a certain age. That's all I'll say. Anyway, they also do incredible razors, and that's what Cornerstone are best known for. We all use Cornerstone razors. We have the engraved shaft on the shelf in our bathrooms. with our, what initials do you have, JB?
JB.
Cool.
Or JDB, actually.
You used to have one called Egg. But
I do. No,
Phil has Egg.
I've got EGG.
And I just have TC. So you can get your free aluminium weighty shaft engraved with whatever you want. You get that for free when you make an order because you listen to us. You can get 6 razors and any other paraphernalia you want delivered in your Cornerstone presentation box, and you get that for a fiver.
Wonderful stuff.
All that for a fiver because you listen to us. All you need to do is go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 at checkout.
Right, Phil, you've got a quiz, haven't you?
I have.
Should we do this and then we can jump into the rest of the rugby?
Let's do it. Let me just get it up.
While you're just getting it up, did you, which links into the other Cornerstone product to me, did you see Spain beat New Zealand in the...
I did.
Toronto 7, or Vancouver, wasn't it?
Yeah, I saw that.
In the 7 series. That was awesome.
That is impressive.
And Canada beat Fiji.
Yeah, Canada looking incredible.
Yeah, looking really good. This is one of the issues that World Rugby have, and we'll talk about some of their issues more in the podcast. The 7s game and the 15s game, I think, are competing now. They're completely separate sports. Yeah. There's no relation between one and the other beyond...
In fact, in many ways, it's damaging for the 15s game.
That's what I mean, yeah. They're almost in competition with each other.
I'll give you an example of when I saw this firsthand, was when Kenya played against Germany. And I'm watching these Kenyan backs play, and they're sevens guys. They're very good sevens guys, but sevens players do things differently. Like they would stop still, and they'd receive the ball, and then they'd give it. Like they looked like they were trying to find the space which you get in sevens, and you just don't get it.
Yeah, you don't get the time or space.
And the issue is you can't have a top player. You have to be Leona Nakarawa and of that level of skill to be able to translate and play 15s and 7s. Well, there are very, very few players who can play both sports.
I think you can play 15s and transition to 7s with the right fitness work. I don't think the skills and the amount of time you have in 7s allows you to transfer up into 15s. I would do it the other way around. I'm sure there's loads of people out there who disagree with that. I'm sure if I asked Rob Vickerman, he would put me in my place there.
Well, there's a lot of countries that use 7s as a little place to blood some of their young players.
Yeah. I mean, New Zealand have done it very well. They've rotated people in and out.
Yeah, Rico Ioane.
Yeah, Australia. Talking about, what's his name?
Falau.
In the same way that Adam Ashley-Cooper went to sevens for a little while.
And Habana tried at the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah, so you can go both ways, but I think it's better to be a 15s player going to sevens and learn to play with less space than going sevens to 15s.
I think if they'd have done 10s... you might have been able to have a great sport like sevens with loads of tries, but have players being able to move between the two.
I like the way football have done it, which is, let's not mess around with our format. It's 11 a side and everything else can, be your hobby. And then cricket has gone like the other way around, which is you've got 16 different versions of the game and we're going to make up a new version of the game very, very shortly because fans have got even less attention span than we originally thought.
For more on all of that, listen to our other podcast in your feed, hit subscribe. But Phil, go on.
So this is a Super Rugby quiz.
Oh, okay.
God, I've not watched a minute.
I literally don't know anyone Super Rugby.
Well, there's not too much about this year. There's only, in fact, 2 questions about this year.
Okay.
So, first question. What is the closest geographical Super Rugby rivalry?
Wow.
So which two teams, their home stadiums are closest or... Yeah, closest.
Okay.
Together.
Can I answer now, or do you want me to write it down?
Write it down, please.
Right, okay.
Question number 2.
Hang on. Okay, yeah.
Question number 2.
Yeah.
Can you name the Super Rugby jerseys which are manufactured by Canterbury? Now, I'm not going to tell you how many there are, and it's negative marking if you get it wrong.
Ooh,
yeah. But there is more than one.
Okay, yeah. I've got all 4 of them. Right, next
question number 3. Which team has won the most titles?
Okay, next.
Yeah.
Question number 4. Super Rugby was preceded by Super 6 in 1992.
Wow.
Featuring teams from three countries. Name the countries.
Wow. Super Six.
Wow. Okay. It's got to be... It can't be that easy.
No, it can't be, can it? Okay, next.
Question number five. Who was the top point scorer in last season's Super Rugby? And I will give you... So I only want one answer. If you get number one, you get 2 points.
Okay.
If you get number two or number three, you get half a point.
Sorry, what was the question?
Top point scorer last season.
Okay, so if you get one. Okay, fine, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And finally, question...
So you want us to go for three?
No, just one.
Yeah, I understand now.
Put
what you're
one
saying.
Name down. Cool. If you get it on the nose, you get a bonus point.
Yeah.
If you get one of the next two. And question number six. After four rounds of Super Rugby, although one of these teams has only played three games, but after four rounds, there are two winless teams in this year's Super Rugby. Who are they?
Okay. Okay.
Western Force, mate.
Western Force, yep. Western Force.
Right. Question number one. Geographical rivalry.
Bulls and Lions.
Tim?
I said Brumbies and Waratahs.
I can tell you the Brumbies and Waratahs.
Hang on. I thought it was South Africa.
Closest rivalry.
Super Rugby rivalry.
Oh, not South African.
No.
I thought, for some reason, I thought it was South African.
You might be right anyway.
Oh,
so,
no.
I can tell you that the Waratahs and the Brumbies are 256 kilometres apart. This is if you drive from one to the other. And they're in third place. In second place...
It's got to be New Zealand teams.
The Blues and the Chiefs in second place. Auckland Blues, Waikato Chiefs are 124 kilometres apart.
Oh.
And the Lions and the Bulls
yes!
are
what?
56 kilometres apart.
That all?
Woo!
They can't justify
God,
that.
I'm relieved.
Two separate get in. Towns, aren't they? Pretoria and Joburg.
Yeah.
I'm losing this big
so
time.
What,
I know
1-0. Okay.
Okay.
Super Rugby jerseys made by Canterbury.
Lions and Wolves.
Lions, some Wolves. Tim?
Yeah, I've got those and the Waratahs.
Oh, nice.
Tim gets 3 points. JB gets two. And... there is one other as well.
Is there? Ooh.
Brumbies, are they still Canterbury? No.
Nope.
BLK, aren't they all there?
Yeah, I think so.
None of the New Zealand teams.
They're all Adidas.
Yeah.
Nike would be...
Is Jaguares.
It's going to be the Sharks.
Correct. Which is actually...
Can I have that point?
No. Which is actually interesting because the South African teams this season have got Marvel superheroes themes,
awesome.
Even though they're made by three different brands.
Yeah.
So you've got Puma, you've got Canterbury. Puma doing...
Why, by the way? Is Marvel have paid for that?
Yeah, who's paying who, actually?
Yeah, I've no idea.
So
no,
someone's no getting paid.
No idea who's paying who. Anyway, question number three. Probably the easiest question.
Yeah.
Most titles?
Crusaders.
JB?
Canterbury.
Crusaders, yeah. Which puts you at 4 points all.
Do they still have a horse that runs out before a game?
So, Tim
a knight.
Outside of the cord, like the cardboard castle.
Yeah. Papier-mâché castle.
Do you get a point for each of these three countries?
1 point for each country.
Oh, well,
no negative mark.
In which case, I'm just going to say Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and hope I get two. Because it can't be that simple.
JB?
Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong.
So... South Africa was still under apartheid rules, so they weren't competing in international sport pre-93 or whatever it was, 94. So it was Australia, New Zealand, and the Fijian national team competed.
Well, well, well. Been done before. It
and
was done
regressed.
Originally.
A couple of years later, a Samoan national team played in a similar type tournament. Super 10 tournament.
What an interesting idea.
Well, actually, there is a Fijian team in the Australian version of the Mitre Cup.
Yes, there is. Fiji so
Warriors? They're all doing it. You know, they're not completely completely ignoring them.
So I'm still 1 point ahead with...
No,
level.
Drawing level.
How come?
You four all.
Because I got the first one, which should be worth more than 1 point.
JB got the distance, the Lions Bulls.
Oh, yes.
Distance.
Oh, okay, yes.
So, next one. Richie Mwaga, whatever his
Mwaga.
Name is.
I said D-Mac. Ooh,
so, one. That's a better one than mine. I can tell you, Mwaga was in seventh place.
Oh, for God's sakes.
But Bernard Foley was in first.
Uh-huh.
So, he would have been 2 points. Your friend and part-time colleague, Robert Dupree, was second place.
Really?
Second place last year. And D-Mac was in third place. Means he gets half a point.
Yeah.
Hang on.
And goes into the lead.
So Rob Dupree, he told me he had 24 starts for the Sharks.
15 last season.
Oh, right. Bloody hell.
He probably played pretty much every game.
Pretty good then, isn't he?
He's all right, yeah. With Yantis and Sanchez going fourth and fifth.
Excellent.
Are you allowed to guess on this last one?
Yes, but you can't. You can only write two down. So there's no negative marking, but you can only write two down.
Okay, well, the only one I'm confident on is Chiefs.
I got Chiefs.
Chiefs is correct. After four rounds, including a home game against the Sunwolves, Chiefs are winless. That really is amazing.
And my other one.
Well, thank you for giving me that little thing because I couldn't remember if Sunwolves had won or not. So thanks for that, Phil. Appreciate it. That might have been my next guess, but it's not now.
Reds is my other guess.
I can't go with Reds because otherwise I'd just be copying JB because I wasn't confident on one.
Come on.
If it's red, no, because it doesn't matter. Because if it's Reds, you win, and if it's not Reds, I win. So. I'll leave it with that.
So you go for Sunwolves as your first answer. Well, it is the Reds.
Yes! No, I don't think I've won.
By half a point.
JB wins 8 points to 7.5.
Wow. I got
well done.
I'm fine with losing a Super Rugby quiz. That's not a problem.
Well done, JB.
Not bothered
well
by that at all.
Well done, me. Fair play. Do it again.
You're such a Super Rugby hipster.
Yeah, I am.
How's it doing, do you think, in terms of like UK people watching it? Is
Rubbish.
There still a lot of heat on it? Do people still care?
No, so I made a little gag on Twitter, like how new that someone watches Super Rugby because they'll tweet about it. I think it's got a hardcore following. This is the problem we're going to have with the Global Rugby Cup season thing, which we're thinking of. The bigger and more convoluted...
That should be the name of it, by the way.
Yeah.
Global Rugby Cup. Thingy.
Yeah,
almost as good as the Southern Kings.
Oh my word!
Corporation.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're talking Super Rugby. Yeah. So it's the Kings, obviously, who are in Pro 14. They've been taken over, or a majority stake has been bought by a consortium of local businessmen and women, or whoever it is, and they gave themselves the name, the company name that they've come together to form in their conglomerate. And I quote: "The greatest rugby company in the whole wide world limited."
Yeah, it's I'm not sure it's a sustainable project. I've not thought this one through. Yeah,
it's up there with Freddie Tuolagi's
Global Bro Sport
agency. Global Bro Sports.
That's brilliant. Global Bro Sport. I can't remember what I was saying then. What was I saying?
Does anyone care about Super Rugby?
Yeah, no, I'm not even people in those nations care about it anymore. And I think that's a real shame because I remember growing up watching rugby.
Christian Cullen, I remember being one of the first people I really got excited about as a rugby player.
It was I always felt that Southern Hemisphere rugby growing up was far, far more popular than Northern Hemisphere rugby.
Yeah, everyone was talking about, oh, this is the future.
Yeah.
This is pointing the way.
And, you know, I remember the images on TV. It all looked so perfect as well. Like, families picnicking on, like, grass verges. And it looked absolutely brilliant. And now it's just empty, dull stadiums. Like, you know, It's a bit of a shame to see, but I think it's because it's expanded too much, and more rugby is very rarely the answer.
Sometimes less is more.
Yes, quite.
Well, and the NFL, which you and I both love, JB, is one of the best examples of that.
Exactly, it is.
It's only six. I mean, you have that whole barren period of like 5.5 months with no American football. But when it's there...
And they're fighting like cats and dogs to expand the game, the season to 18 games, and saying, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that's the way forward. Just have your thing and make it more and more valuable. But we can talk about that in our clubhouse. What are we going to call it? Committee podcast.
Boardroom podcast.
Blazer podcast.
Yes. 100, yeah, we'll do it in Blazer.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, some domestic matters then.
Yes, let's do that.
Well, I tell you what, let's look ahead to next weekend's and round off the Six Nations, and then we'll move on to domestic matters so we don't cross the streams too much. So, Super Saturday.
Super Saturday.
Where are you going to be watching Super Saturday? What are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm trying to organize. Well, so Talk H are out and about, so I might join them.
No game.
We've got the week off.
Right.
What are you two up to?
To be honest, I'll probably be watching it at home after being away pretty much all weekend.
Oh, right. Okay, fine. Tim?
To be confirmed, I'm working at Northampton on Sunday for the Premiership Rugby Cup final.
Ah, nice.
So I just have to work out my logistics there.
So one of the finest days I have had in quite some time was watching Wales-England, that game, starting off with a little bite to eat in Rosso. Didsbury, watching most of the France game on my iPad.
Was this your dessert wine extravaganza?
Exactly right. And I was hoping to replicate the experience, but with three games. But I'm struggling to find friends, so I might have to just join the lads in the rugby club.
I might be on. I mean, nothing's going to top Mojo's in Bucharest for Super Saturday. That was immense.
Yes, it was immense.
That was something else.
Was Spain the last weekend as well?
No,
second to last.
That was second to last.
Yeah,
because don't forget there was that.
That's right. Yeah,
if it hadn't been if the week before. No, hold on. No.
You had
right.
a Sunday game, and we all went to Wales on Sunday.
Yeah.
So just on watching the rugby, I've just got to send apologies out to Patrick Taranto, who we played with in New Jersey.
Oh yeah.
Who was over to watch the Scotland Wales game. And offered to buy me a beer.
And you said no?
No, I said yes, but then basically had no signal inside the ground and for a long time afterwards.
What?
So, apologies, Patrick.
Come on.
I missed out on a beer.
Oh, good on you, Patrick. And also, we've really started something. Do you know what? As one legacy of Egg Chasers, I'm really proud of this.
People going to Spain?
People going on Tier 2 tours.
Yes.
Even though we didn't do one this year, there are literally hundreds of people that have been sending us pictures of them going on tours to go and see games in Belgium, in Spain, in Romania, and all over the continent, and I'm really, really proud of that.
Yep. So the best one I think I've seen, Andrew Wingrove got in touch with us on Twitter to say it's not right now, but it is booked in the diary. Flights are booked for some guys from Dubai to fly to Georgia to watch the Georgia wow. Scotland game.
Wow.
Pre-World Cup.
That's one I want to go. Can we do that one?
That would be brilliant.
Can we do Tbilisi?
I think
JB and I might struggle to do it this year.
Do you know, I just don't really want to do it. I'm quite happy just flying over to Madrid. I'd do Madrid two or three times a year to watch rugby. I love it. I think it's the best place to watch rugby.
If there were direct flights to Tbilisi, you'd be on it. Like a carb on it, wouldn't you?
It's not so much that. It's not that at all, really. It's about the quality of the drinking and food and city. I mean, that's my thing. Madrid's great.
Madrid was amazing.
Do you know what? Rome is great, too. Yeah. I never used to like Rome. Rome was bloody fantastic. So
yeah, that's why we want, and we'll talk about this on the other pod, Italy, get down to Tier 2, and we'll go and watch, we'll go and watch Italy against Romania. That'd be awesome.
Perfect.
Yes. Right. So what's the first game on Super Saturday? Yes. It is a shame that they can't do these to be the fixture times to be confirmed and do it in reverse order. So Wales,
first
Ireland
one is
was last.
Italy, France.
Yeah. 12:30 kickoff.
That's fine. I don't mind if I miss
well,
this.
Well, I do care.
The Garibaldi Cup.
if Italy win this, I'm in line for a 180 quid payout on a £10 bet because I put the wrong bet on. I went to put France to win the whole thing.
I'm sorry to burst your bubble, JB.
They can't.
Oh, can they not?
France have got two bonus points. So France are on 6 points.
No!
Italy are on zero.
Another wasted bet. Oh, well.
So, you know what? If you've got jobs to do or you need to put a bit of family time in, maybe I can meet you about 3 o'clock, Jay.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that'll be the time to get some Negronis down us, a nice saffron risotto, and, you know, get the stomach lined for going to watch the next game, which is Wales.
So that game is an aperitif.
Italy-France. Italy have a chance. France, Italy?
Yeah.
So Italy against France. Italy do have a chance. So they played very poorly against England, but something that they've done the rest of the tournament is frustrate teams and stop teams from scoring, which they did well against both Ireland and Wales. So I don't think that's a foregone conclusion, that Italy-France game.
I think it is. I think France will do them. I think it'll be a big win.
Yeah. I think France will do them, but it might be relatively close.
Yeah.
So then we move on to...
So 2:45 in Cardiff.
It should be the last game.
What is the Grand Slam decider, but could decide the whole tournament? And there's three teams that can win. So Wales host Ireland.
Well, I just hope Ireland win, because otherwise there's sort of like... it's very anticlimactic then watching England with no hope of potentially winning.
It's irrelevant.
How will it go, though? It's an immovable object meets a... what's that phrase?
Unstoppable force, immovable object.
It's one of those. Two incredible defences.
I think Wales limited attacks a little bit this year. Is everyone thinking that Wales are favourite?
Yes, I do know. And I think Wales will win.
So, if Ireland were to win, how do they do it? Because no one's beaten Wales yet. No one's beaten Wales for 13 games. How do you beat Wales?
If I knew, I'd be the best paid coach probably in the world right now. I suspect if they beat Wales, it'll be by thoroughly outplaying them. It'll be scoring early, make Wales chase the game as it opens
Fight.
Up. Yeah. Ireland will score more and more.
Johnny Sexton has to do what Owen Farrell couldn't do and find grass.
Yeah.
So, and Liam Williams has to be fit for Wales. Yeah. If he's not... Which and Warren Gatland seemed fairly confident that he would be.
And I'm pretty sure that Ireland can't do what they did today, which is continuously go to the corners. If they have chances for points, they've got to take those points.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with that, actually. So I'll say one thing. If I were Schmidt, and I think Schmidt will be looking at this, I would be targeting the Welsh line-out. So the Welsh line-out has been a little bit shaky. England put it under some pressure, not enough towards the end of the game. Scotland put it under some pressure, and I think Omani and Ryan will be reading that and really targeting and putting pressure on that as a way of taking off pressure from themselves, but also putting on pressure to Wales.
Yeah, it's going to be a tight one. Although I think if one team could win it by more than the other, if that makes sense, it would be. I think Ireland could potentially win the thing with more points than. If Wales win, does that make sense? I think Wales will win in an absolute slugfest. Ireland have the potential to.
All right, Ireland have got to find grass and or win the aerial game, which Ireland are capable of doing.
Oh well, so Stockdale seems to be a little tricky in this regard.
Yeah, but if Carney comes back, that's a big
Carney back. Is Halfpenny near ready? Heard nothing about him this week.
And also, he played very, very well for Scarlets in their win over Munster. He played very well.
Did he?
Defensively outstanding.
So he could be around. And Liam Williams has a... Oh, no, it's just a stinger. So he should be okay. So they're going to be up against it. And Dan Bigger in reserve. I mean, there's not a
just better... Close out the game.
Yeah, there's not a better fly half in the world at that.
This is going to be like... one of the spring offensives in World War One, the battle for the gain line is going to be measured
in inches.
They're just gonna like Joe Schmidt's gonna be like who was the war general for the Allied forces in the can't remember the guy's name.
He's the French fella.
He just said, more. I just need more. In off you go. More. Need more men. Go. They're just gonna relentlessly smash each other.
I'm looking forward to it now. Now we put it in those terms, I'm looking forward to it. So I think Wales, I mean, if Wales win it, it's going to be amazing. It's Gatland's third Grand Slam, fourth Six Nations. The audit to everything else that he's done in his career. I mean, the guy's a genius. The guy is an absolute genius. And also, if it's a third Grand Slam in whatever it is, 10 years or 12 years, we have to talk about him as probably the best Six Nations coach since Sir Clive Woodward.
I'll go along with that. I think one thing that I would say about Ireland, the way they beat them, is Conor Murray's got to be the Conor Murray that we know, who he hasn't been in this tournament.
You're right.
I tell you who must be annoying to play against. In fact, a lot of Wales players are annoying to play against, I bet. But Gareth Davis in particular, just the energy. He's always bouncing around. He's so fast. He's so strong. You know, he has the occasional brain fart now and again. But I imagine he's annoying to play against. And Conor Murray's a lot more measured than that. I can see Gareth Davis. Gareth Davis, thank you. Really getting underneath the skin. Yeah, I can see him winning that battle.
Mm. So I actually think Ireland will. It's in Cardiff. If it was in Ireland, I'd say Ireland will win. If it's in Cardiff, I'll say Wales will win.
I think the edge is there, but it will be. It's going to be very attritional, as we've already said. It's going to be very close. So it's one of those that could go either way, I think. But I expect it will fall on.
Will the roof be on or off?
It's up to Ireland, is it not?
Yeah, it is. So I imagine they'll have it off.
Yeah. If it rains, it'll be like Passchendaele. If it's dry, it'll be a bit more like Verdun.
Exactly. Well, hang on, here's a question. When you play in the Space Dome in Paris, it's a dome.
Yeah.
You can't choose on or off.
There are no options.
So why do Ireland have the choice?
Because there is a choice, maybe? I don't know.
They need to rewrite that rule. I think Wales should have the choice. It's their home ground.
Yeah. I
On rewriting rules, it was interesting that there was a disallowed try for Ireland, which was on the basis, bearing in mind what we're talking about, the grounding, whether you're carrying the ball or whether the ball is loose and you're touching it. It was decided that Cian Healy hadn't pressed down on the ball, and he just touched it. Because if it were just the law that as long as the ball's in contact with the ground and you have contact, some sort of contact with the ball, technically Cian Healy scored it.
Yeah,
he had to press down. So, anyway,
yeah,
because a lot of people are under this sort of illusion that there is no such that downward pressure is not in the laws. But pressing down is in the laws when the ball is loose.
Yeah, which is the same thing.
Anyway, so we're all going for a narrow Wales win.
Yep, and then a England win.
Yeah, comfortable England win. It's a Twickenham, isn't it? So they're going to batter them.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Looking at these performances and so on and so forth, yeah, I think it'll be comfortable England win. So if Wales slip up, England should win the Six Nations.
If Wales slip up, yes. If Ireland hammer Wales and then England slip up, then Ireland win. Or if Ireland beat Wales and England slip up.
Oh, I see.
But if Wales lose and England win, if England win without a bonus point but Ireland get a bonus point, then it would come down to points difference, which England currently have 64-point advantage.
So Wales have won 13 on the bounce.
Yes. Yeah.
This will be 14 on the bounce.
Yeah, do you know their last defeat? Do you know what their last defeat was?
England?
Ireland.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm. Before they started their 13-game winning run, they lost to Ireland.
So that would mean, and then it comes to the World Cup, if they've got a couple of easy games, what's the record? Is it 16?
18. 18.
England.
So there'd be 14. Do World Cup warm-ups count?
I don't know.
Historically, have there been capped and non-capped warm-ups?
Yes, there have.
Come on, JB Cup.
Yeah,
you should know this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'll consult the people, the team at the JB Cup offices.
Is it based in Geneva or somewhere like that?
Dublin.
Dublin,
yeah, next door to IRB. World Rugby.
Preferential tax arrangements.
Yes, exactly. Oh, interesting. So Wales could... No, they're not going to. They can make a run for that record. They need four or five games.
I mean, they're not bothered about the world record. They're just bothered about holding on to the JB Cup.
Absolutely. Well, that's why you play so hard. You know, so it's such an accolade.
I mean, It's not even because I'm an England fan, just because I love Super Saturday so much. I want Ireland to win just so there is something on the line for the last game and it doesn't feel anticlimactic. Or I want the powers that be to just, in future, change, have flexible kickoff times.
Yeah. So would you like the Ireland game last?
Yeah, Ireland Wales last is how it should be.
Yeah, you're right. Because
let's say England win, they start the final game top of the table and Wales, it just feels great then, doesn't it? The drama, the storylines feel amazing. Anyway, can't have it all.
Yeah, and I prefer this to having all the games at the same time.
Yeah.
Because while the drama is better when you've got all the games at the same time, I like watching three games back to back to back.
Yeah, well, that last...
Yeah, I love it.
That last day of the Premiership season, you feel... I'm already excited about that because you feel like there could be several storylines to be decided on the final day.
Potentially, yes.
With the way that things are looking currently.
Which leads us nicely into wrapping up some of the Premiership stuff.
Well, before you do, there is a question which could be this podcast, but it could be the next one. Do you want to talk about drinking in stadiums?
Let's do that in the boardroom chat.
The boardroom chat. Yeah. You sure?
Yeah. Okay. Although I will say in relation to there was another thing that got bought. I saw a lot of people getting on Twitter, deep in the cesspit on Twitter, getting right in.
No, is that the wrong one?
Oh, what's going on?
Wrong one.
Yeah, wrong one. Never mind. Basically, getting into England and the number of players they have that weren't English.
It's quite a few,
in terms
it?
Of their heritage. Well, so Brad Shields was mentioned, Nathan Hughes, Billy Vunipola,
Mako, I guess.
Ben Teo, Manu Tuilagi.
Mako didn't play the...
There's one more. Joe Thokonasinga. That's six. And then there was Mako and Dylan Hartley not in the side. Now, that's eight, right? Which is quite a lot. Yeah. What I would say to that is, get back in your box.
Why?
Except for Nathan Hughes. He's the only one that I have an issue with because the rest of them have English parents or were kids when they came to England.
And they've been raised school.
You cannot say there was anything mercenary about Joe Cockinessinga coming over age, 12 or whatever he was.
Wasn't his dad in the army? That's why he's here.
Something like that, yeah. So back in your box. It's nothing like... Nathan Hughes, and, 100% with you. It's just like WP Nell and CJ Stander. And loads of other ones like that. James Lowe and Jameson Gibson Park when they're added in. You going for your sound effect, Jay?
Oh, sorry, is that on? It doesn't matter.
No, it's fine.
Go on.
So I was just going to stick up for those England boys who have English parents. In the case of Brad Shields, and
Brad Shields is legitimate. He's got English heritage.
And Ben Teo.
Just legitimately bad as well. And that's the problem.
Not legitimately bad.
He is. I mean, every professional six that I speak to, and I speak to many of them now, are confused as to why this would be the case. I mean, they are legitimately confused. It's a weird selection by any stretch. Matt, let's play a game. How many other sixes are there out there who you'd have ahead of Brad Shields?
Omani?
Try just in the Premiership.
Don Armand.
100%.
Probably Don Armand.
Mark Wilson?
And then we'd have another one to legitimately moan about in terms of heritage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mark Wilson?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Chris
Johnny Ross?
No.
Get a grip. Johnny Ross is the best out the lot. By a country mile. That's outrageous.
I wouldn't...
No, stop it.
He's a good workhorse, John O'Ross.
John O'Ross is a superb player, a leader of men, and a great listener as well. What about Rob Shaw?
Yeah, I'd have Rob Shaw.
Yeah, probably would.
Don Brandt, would you rather see Don Brandt play?
No. Number eight now. Don Brandt, maybe in a year's time.
How about a fit and firing Jack Clifford?
No.
Okay,
definitely not.
I can kind of get on board with that.
If he'd have fulfilled the potential he showed as a 21-year-old, yes.
Willis?
Nowhere near enough game tape.
Not now.
Well, hang on. Yeah, not enough game tape. But like Brad Shields came in as a 27-year-old.
Hadn't played a game for...
Yeah, that the All Blacks didn't actually want. There's a reason they didn't want him. Another Curry?
Brad Shields captained winning Super Rugby season.
Yeah, and they still didn't want him. So, yeah, by the way, your assessment of Jonah Ross is way off.
Jonah Ross is a good player.
Oh, he's a superb player.
Way off.
I would prefer Brad Shields.
That's insane.
In that game against Saracens at the AJ Bell, Jonah Ross like put Billy Vunipola to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't after the happen. First 10 minutes.
Michael Rhodes?
No.
No, I prefer Shields again.
I like Michael Rhodes. Ooh, who's in trouble?
Yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
He will be. He will be.
He should be. So Rook justice.
So let's talk about the Premiership then, because the Premiership was on this weekend.
Yeah, so and particularly, there's a few areas of the table which are getting very, very interesting.
Mm.
Very interesting.
So this is, right, completely unprompted. It wasn't planned. But last night, I sat in.
I did this earlier today, Jay, if I know what you're doing. Trying to war game the rest of the season, yeah, the final six rounds, yeah.
I'll just give you my points totals. So I've done it. Okay, so I've got four more rounds of games left. And
six.
Because I've decided that they're already going down. So the next four lots of games, if I've got this right, it's Tigers 34, Worcester 28, Newcastle 25.
Correct. That's how it currently stands, yeah.
Yeah, current position. And Bristol 35.
Yeah, so I've only done the bottom three. So I think after that, next round of games, I think Tigers will get a losing bonus point. Okay, so they'll be 35.
Just jump ahead.
Worcester 29, Newcastle win.
Jump ahead, yeah. Rather than going round by round. Just jump ahead to where you see it.
Well, I only got to four rounds in the future where I get to Tigers 39... Newcastle 37, Worcester 30, and for me, they're done by then with two rounds to go.
I was saying to Phil before the pod, when we were having a little brief chat, I was looking at the fixtures myself, and I think Worcester, I think the last day of the season, which I was saying I'm most so excited about, I think is going to be a battle for fourth place to eighth place.
Even fourth place, those boys are pulling away now.
Well, ever slightly, but when you look at the fixtures, We'll see about that.
Okay.
I think Quins could well be caught by Sale, for example, when you look at the fixtures. But I don't think relegation is going to be on the line on the final day. I think last weekend has possibly, potentially, when you look forward, could have sealed Worcester's fate.
Yeah, so, I mean, Newcastle are a damn good team. That's the first point.
Well, they're nuggety. They're showing the kind of mental toughness that they showed all last year and at the start of this season.
So in Europe.
Yeah.
So let's just say they would lose against the top four teams, okay? That being, I say them, they. I mean Newcastle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sale Sharks going to St James's Place? St James's Park, right? is eminently winnable. So that tells me they can beat pretty much anyone.
Newcastle have got Quins at home, Sale at home, Northampton at home, and Leicester at home, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's their four home, and they've got four home games out of six. Yeah. That's huge.
Which are all winnable as well.
All winnable home games. That's huge.
So I think that Newcastle might be able to overtake Leicester. I just don't think Worcester can.
No, see, Leicester have got winnable home games as well, and you can't underestimate the impact of Youngs, Ford, May, Tuilagi in that back line.
Yeah. Tamua coming back in.
I mean, they haven't had Vianu all season as well.
Yeah.
Genge and Cole
coming back in.
Yeah, they are good.
So they've got very winnable home games. So yeah. Leicester are going to be fine. Leicester aren't going to get dragged. Aren't going to get sucked into this. But you look at Worcester's fixtures. I think they're done. Well, no, obviously they're not done because any team can win on any given day. But they're in big trouble.
They are. But they came back and got two losing bonus points against Exeter.
Yeah, they did.
That's a good result. So I think if they win two more, they stay up.
Yes. Even then, I think it's touch and go.
Yeah.
I think they've got a minimum of two. Two plus bonus points, maybe.
I think Newcastle could end up on 40 points, which means Worcester need to win three, really, unless they pick up a lot of bonus points.
It's going to be fascinating.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Worcester, definitely all my favourites. I think...
How it's turned around unbelievably in the last fortnight.
For some reason, I don't know. I think I've just got a funny feeling about Tigers. Do you know when people say things are too big to fail? It just makes me think that that's sort of coming around the corner for them.
Take those six England players, plug them in. They haven't got to worry about Europe. They've just got six Premiership games left in their season. That's it.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I think had they not have sneaked that win over Wasps, they'd be on 30 points. It would be genuine concern time for them.
Yeah.
I think they will be okay because they will eke out a couple of wins.
I mean, I do mean this. When I first started getting into rugby, Leicester Tigers, it was all about Leicester Tigers. They were amazing. And there's something which I hate about seeing rubbish Leicester Tigers teams. Like, they're just not doing... It's not the players' fault. I mean, they're not trying to be bad. I just don't think they've recruited wisely. Or the guys that they have recruited, they're putting in a poor situation by putting them all together.
Well, I mean, I know Quinn's had a bad weekend this weekend, but you actually look at Quinn's without internationals going away.
Yep.
And when you used to take out the Quinn's four or five England players, they'd look a totally different team. Leicester, albeit even when they had their players, they didn't look that great in the pack particularly.
They didn't.
But they're replacing really, really good players with quite average ones. Mm.
Yes, yeah, you're right. And they're trying to find value, aren't they? I mean, I really liked how they kind of got three number eights to work out which one would be any good. And it hasn't particularly... Well, I don't know. Guy Thompson's been a good player for them, just not being on the field enough. I thought Will Spencer, would do a really good job for them. But he's not been on the field enough. He's an enormous man, by the way.
I think he will. And there's talk of Callum Green going to
Leicester. Callum Green has gone. So Callum Green and
Will Spencer.
And Jonathan Davis.
That sounds like a really gnarly second row. Like, that sounds like a Leicester lock.
And Jonathan Davis today has been linked with them as well.
Yeah, JD.
So that would be right, and that does make sense because they were looking to get Hugh Jones, and that failed at like the last minute. So they will reinforce, but I don't like watching Leicester Tigers do so poorly. I watched them on Friday. They were poor.
Yeah, I've seen the highlights of that. They were not good. Yeah.
So I'll just say a few things about Sale, or one thing about Sale, which is. I am very excited about the prop, Val Moztoff, or whatever the hell his name is.
So Sale's scrum looked incredible against Leicester.
Mr. Deadlift. His legs are unreal. I love him. I love a good set of quads.
He knows about three words of English. God knows how they're getting him to do what he's doing.
Deadlift. One is deadlift, one is squat, and one is
gym
press.
Open now?
Yeah.
He's in the gym allegedly every day until 5. Like, he loves his gym work. Dimes in his press conference afterwards was purring about him, and he doesn't speak in these glowing terms too often. He looks the real deal, so very, very excited about that if you're a neutral.
And again, looking at fixtures, Sale have got a very, very favourable fixture list. They fourth is not beyond them.
I think it is, and my criticism of them would be is they've got a pack now. Sale are quite a hard-working team. Like, we were talking about Johnny Ross, and you got the Currys, and Strauss is quite a hard worker at times. Harrison is another one who does a great job.
Yeah.
Well, they've got Newcastle away, which they could go and win.
Yeah.
But then, bearing in mind the context of the season as it stands, they're at home to Harlequins.
Mm. Yeah, so... I just wonder if they won't have enough work rate as a unit.
On the same weekend that Bath are at home to Bristol, by the way. Bath now put themselves...
And Bath are coming to the AJ Bell as well.
Yes, they are.
So that's going to be a good game.
Sale are away to Worcester and then home to Bath. So they're away to Newcastle and Worcester, home to Quins and Bath.
It should be doable.
They could win four games there.
Yeah, all winnable.
I don't think they will, though. I just don't think I don't think they've got enough legs in the pack with those guys.
Which is why, on the last day of the season, I think they might have a shout at top four, and they are at home to Gloucester, last day of the season.
So when's AJ back?
Next week.
That's important.
Means enough to find someone else to watch the game with, which is upsetting.
Anyway, we don't need to get into the fixtures. But
yes.
We touched quite a bit on Sale. We touched quite a bit on Leicester. We've not yet mentioned the two last-minute wins for Newcastle and Bristol.
Yes.
Penalties slotted in the last minute to win by 1 point and 2 points.
What happened at the end of the Northampton game, by the way?
Not seen it, couldn't tell you.
No, I've only seen the kick, the Madigan kick.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of people been saying that there's loads of yellow cards given out. It sounded like it was a bit reminiscent of Worcester when they beat Bath.
All I know, right, is that I'm slowly falling in love with this Bristol team. I absolutely love them. So it's kind of like waifs and strays and then some very, very expensive players. But that's effectively what they are. And everything about them was set up for ridicule. Like the Bears, I mean, come off it. And like some of their kit looks, yeah, a little bit cheesy. But the whole thing just works really well.
Yeah, and I was only wrong in how right I was before the season when I called them ninth and said that their front row would be dynamite.
So I'm looking at the match incident for Northampton Bristol. 73 minutes Reinach yellow card. 76 minutes Gibson yellow card. 77 minutes Tom Wood yellow card. 81 plus 1. Don't know why it's written like that, but 82 minutes Alex Waller yellow card. So four players off when Piers O'Connor scores the try and then Madigan converts to win by 2 points.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is what I'm loving at the moment. I know we've heard it before. Gotta love that, haven't you?
Is it like a Wurzel song?
It is a Wurzel song. And what I love about it the most is like you actually need to know the words to sing it. You can't just join in.
Yeah.
You have no idea what they're saying. They've got thick accents. You've actually got to make the effort to learn the Wurzel song in order to sing it. It's
like
brilliant.
Like Gareth Ameskin did with the Welsh National Anthem.
Very similar. Yeah, I'm a massive Bristol Bears fan at the moment. I hope they can just, you know, keep this up for a little longer. Just get safe. Two more wins.
Keep paying Sir Charles and Luatua.
Yeah.
Reece Priestland is apparently struggling to get a contract for next season.
Shock.
Really?
Oh, North Wales?
After slotting six penalties.
Yeah.
Now, I say shock, and I sound like I'm being rather harsher. What I actually mean is I can't see him commanding the salary he might think that he deserves.
Well, I think that... Well, yes, and he might be coming to that realisation himself. He may well end up staying at Bath and doing an understudy job for someone like Andre Pollard that they're rumoured to be interested in, that kind of a guy.
Ooh, is that who they're after?
I think they're after a big name 10.
It has to be weird for Bath to go for a big name.
This is like Dyson, Dyson and Craig money, you know what I mean? Mm.
It's they're not playing games, are they?
His checkbook is open.
What would happen to Burns?
Mm.
Poor Billy. Poor Billy if he's moved on again.
Billy. Freddie.
Billy
Burns is going nowhere.
Yeah.
Freddie to Ulster?
Maybe.
Get them both there?
No, because he's not Irish qualified.
Yeah.
Whereas Billy is, but he's not. So it does make a big difference, that.
Yeah. It does.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about the great win for Newcastle? Kind of mentioned that. Worcester were kind of impressive, two losing bonus points.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Did well to do that.
Anything else that stands out for anyone?
Back three of Worcester is very, very good. So Bryce Heame is leaving the club next
Toulon,
season.
Is that right?
Yeah, really? Toulon.
He is a hell of a runner.
He is good, isn't he?
Yeah, so strong and so powerful.
He's massive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Let's wrap that up then.
Let's wrap that up. It's all Six Nations weekend mainly, isn't it? I mean, there's no Premiership next weekend, so that's all good. Right, don't forget to subscribe to our channel wherever you listen and make sure you listen to the other podcast where we're going to put our blazers on and solve all rugby's problems.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.